the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 374, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Last month, Matt and I selected our six best teams in BYU sports history. In this episode, Matt and I talk about one of those teams, the 1999 National Championship Men's Volleyball Team. What moments and players made that season so special? Before that, we talk about the effect UConn's departure from the AAC could have on BYU's conference affiliation future. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on iTunes to get this downloaded every week to your phone or favorite device, and listen to us right now. Matt, we're about to break some of the biggest news we've ever discussed on this show.
Wow, and I have no idea where you're going with this, but right. I can't wait.
So it comes from the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Spence, that's at Texas Coug Fan on Twitter. You can tweet at us at BYU underscore Rise Shout. He says to me, this is addressed to me on Twitter.
Wow, aren't you? It's right to you. That's special.
It's very special.
Way to go, little guy. Way to go, Tiger.
Thanks. Thanks,
Buckaroo.
Buddy. Thanks, buddy. Buckaroo. See, you went too far. Like, you had Tiger and Buddy. Buckaroo, too far. Okay, Spence says, hey, Adam, good news for you. I also love Willow, because I was filling time in last week's show because you were thinking, and I talked about my love of Willow. And Disney re-released the movie in January of this year. What? How did I miss that? He says, you can get it on Blu-ray and digital. Keep up the good work. Hashtag tweetbag. Matt, you can get Willow now. I have it on DVD, and I wasn't about to get
somebody
my
help. But somebody help. Get... There's a peck here with an acorn pointed at me. It's a great line.
Weirdo, you idiot.
It's a great movie.
What are you staring at? Your leg. I want to break it. All right. So anyway, that's our news. But let's get into some real news with the CougarFan.com Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, UConn, which is not words I thought I'd say on this podcast, UConn is headed to the Big East.
Somebody, there you go, guys.
Somebody is making a decision on conference affiliation, not because of football. To the contrary, this is the wrong decision for the football program, but the right decision for probably all the rest of their programs, and they should have never left the Big East to begin with. So, Matt...
Right, and let's be honest. If you're UConn, you shouldn't be making any decisions solely based on your football program.
Fair enough. Fair
fact?
Enough. Yeah, fact, yes, absolutely. It's all about women's basketball there. And men's basketball, isn't it Todd Hurley? Isn't that their new coach?
Yeah, men's basketball there was really good back really in good the day, but while, they've struggled, I think, as of late. But obviously... one of the best, if arguably the best, women's basketball program in the country for years, right? I mean, who's better?
Tennessee was up there, but I mean, nobody's
better. Year in, year out, I mean, yeah, they're just dominant.
Bobby Hurley, Todd Hurley. I was combining Bobby Hurley with Todd Gurley.
I don't even know who Todd Hurley is.
I don't know. I'm sure there's a Todd Hurley out there. So anyway, Matt,
listen to the show.
Why we're discussing this is speculation began immediately, both nationally and within BYU fandom, that could this be the domino that falls that puts BYU back with the American Athletic Conference? As you and I discussed years ago on this show, there was at one point the thought, but apparently negotiations several years ago broke down between BYU and the American Athletic Conference for BYU to join the conference, because now they're sitting at 11 teams. So, Matt, is BYU going to join the American Athletic Conference for football and potentially all the other sports?
I'm just saying, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? We talked about this last week. Why wasn't there any discussion about the state of independence during media day last week? I'll tell you why. Because they knew this was about to happen, and they'd already been talking to the American Conference about it. That's not true. That's just a conspiracy theory. I don't buy that at all.
Wait a second. Did you just argue with yourself?
No, but that is a theory that I think some people would subscribe to. But I don't believe that that's true.
So I'll give,
I don't even remember what your original question was.
I'll give one guarantee.
Your question, do I give credence to this?
No, I just asked you if you thought they might join. You went off on some like argument with yourself. Yeah, so, I don't even know what happened.
So let me give you a short answer to that. No, I don't.
Okay, so I'll give you a guarantee and I'll give you an answer to the question. The guarantee is Tom Homo.
I love guarantees.
Tom Homo guaranteed has talked with the American Athletic Conference in the last week. And
yep,
to your point,
I believe that's true.
He may have known about this UConn deal before the press did. It's possible. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe so. I believe the American Athletic Conference is the landing spot if BYU does not get into a P5 conference when the next realignment happens. I believe that the reason the state of independence and a lot of discussion of independence wasn't done is because the plan is in several seasons, so call it, I don't know, when is the new contracts up, like 2024?
2023, 24, something like that.
I believe that BYU will either join the American Athletic Conference or a P5 conference. I think they're finding that if they can make the financials work with the conference, and by the way, not the Mountain West Conference, they're going to figure something out because independence is really hard. It's not that it hasn't been exactly what they thought it would be, but it's really hard. And these schedules, we'll get to this here in a second, are brutal, right? And are going to be difficult to have a special season in because of how difficult they are.
Right.
So, Don, our brother on Twitter, says, do people who want to go to the AAC confuse it with the ACC? I don't think so.
I see what you did there, Don.
Yeah, very clever.
But Don has a good point, right? I think Don's point really here is like, this is not getting an invite to this conference is not this. This is not what we went independent for. This is not what we've been waiting for.
Well, and it's not a good fit, right? Think of how terrible this would be. I mean, for football, it's difficult because your closest rivals are Houston and Tulsa, right? Geographically, but think about that for the Olympic sports. It's a terrible fit for the Olympic sports, right?
Oh, the travel.
For anything besides football. Football is not a great fit geographically anyway, but football right now is traveling all over the place anyway, right? So, but it's a terrible fit for everything else, right? And I don't think the American Athletic Conference has any interest in a football-only situation. Now, maybe they do. But I'd be shocked if that's the case, right? The news that scenarios, right? You know, Lawless Republic had an article about, you know, under what scenarios would BYU accept an invite. And these were the two scenarios. Okay, Matt, tell me what you think about these scenarios. Number one, three or more teams join, and they proposed, or at least speculated a little bit, you know, you could have BYU, Boise State, and then pick a team such as Utah State, Appalachian State, Middle Tennessee, Army, or Air Force. So, Matt, if Boise State came with us and then bring along somebody else, would you be more interested in the AAC?
I could get more interested in the AAC with Boise State coming along, and even more so if Utah State was in that bucket.
Yeah.
I think geographically that makes a lot more sense for all the other sports. It gives you a little bit of some historical rivalry to your conference schedule. So you're not having to go and try and eat up your non-conference games to get a decent rivalry game instead of pretending that Houston is now your new rival or just Boise. You know, that Utah State addition does help move the needle for me because I think about that more, especially in basketball and other sports, right? So in a situation where Boise State and Utah State go, yeah, I could get behind this a lot quicker.
Yeah.
But that's notwithstanding any of the financial ramifications of this, right? Which is a little bit of a separate conversation.
Yeah. So the other scenario they point out is, say BYU sets it up and says, hey, we've got this independent schedule. We've got all these buyouts that we'd have to do. Let's join in 2023. And we're the 12th team, and that would give them I think two football seasons at 11 teams, the AAC under this, you know, hypothetical, like the writer, Adam Gibby, I don't think he's saying this is what's going to happen. He's just, you know, talking about how it could work. So you'd stay independent through the 2022 season. And then in 2023, you would have to buy out three games. You'd have to do it again in 2024. And then after that, you wouldn't have to buy out any more games. But you'd have a couple of games to three games in 2023, potentially, and two games. They would have to give BYU, in this scenario, the AAC, a lot of leeway, right? And a sweetheart deal similar to what the Mountain West has done with Boise State. But here's the problem. No way they're going to do that. There's no incentive for the American Athletic Conference. Quite frankly, I think their best thing is to stand pat until the new TV contracts come around and see if they, you know, because what really would change the game for them is if they added, they became a Power 5 conference and absorbed part of the Big 12, right? And I'm guessing it's at some level they're thinking that could be a possibility, right?
Right, so leave that door open and see how this all shakes out at the end of those contracts.
Why wouldn't you? But, I mean, BYU or Boise helps your strength of schedule, right? Swapping them for UConn is a boost for everybody in the conference's strength of schedule. No-brainer there, right? But financially, Boise's probably not an addition. Why would Boise leave their sweetheart deal with the Mountain West Conference? I'd have to see the numbers, but I'm guessing they're making more now than they would, even though the American Athletic Conference has a better TV deal than the Mountain West does. And BYU, same thing. I think everybody just waits this out. I don't think hurry.
Nah, there shouldn't be a hurry. This isn't like when you go back to when this big, you know, all this that led to BYU going independent in the first place, right? There was panic when Pac-12 came knocking in Austin.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For sure.
And it set off all of these dominoes, and people were freaking out. And especially if you're the Pac-12, you're like, well, we can't lose UT. What are we going to do? I mean, when you're the Big 12. And so there's all of this work that went into, you know, poaching teams and all this stuff. And when you look at the programs that ended up shifting, you know, A&M leaves for the SEC and all this stuff, and those dominoes that fell, and look at the programs that you're talking about there. And then you look at this initial domino, this catalyst of an event where UConn is leaving the American Conference. It is not the same thing. There is no reason for this to set off some tidal wave of conference reconstruction before those TV contracts are due. You know, if you're an American Conference, you have zero incentive to sell out for BYU right now.
Well,
you don't. You just don't.
We've talked about this. The pie from the TV contracts is the same. You add another team. Think of it this way. The 11 teams get to split the money now once UConn's out. That means each
right.
school will get more money, I believe. I'd have to see the details of their contract. Maybe not, because it might be based on number of games and there'd be fewer games or something. But you add a 12th team back, you're not making more money. Right, and if you expand,
right. and your costs just went up,
and if you
expand, now you got to travel to both of them.
Right, if you expand to 14 teams, say add Boise and Utah State, we'll just pick one. Are the networks going to give you more money? Probably, but enough that it equals out that everybody's still making what they were before? Probably not. So that only happens if one of those three teams added is Oklahoma. Right. And that's the problem for BYU in this scenario. Say the Big 12 implodes. Okay. Texas goes to the Pac-12 so it becomes the Pac-14. Okay. Then Oklahoma's options are the SEC potentially, but the SEC's not going to take Oklahoma State, I don't think, to get them. So all of a sudden, the American Athletic Conference becomes it, or Oklahoma has to start their own conference, right? Those are the dominoes that are going to make everything crazy, not UConn. Nobody cares about
right.
this except for maybe some of the AAC schools, and clearly Big East basketball. This is interesting, but otherwise, who cares? All right.
Oh, it's a great deal for Big East basketball.
Yeah, yeah. Football schedule, Matt, according to, let's see, who is this according to? According to Athlon Sports, they rank the top 25 toughest schedules of the season, and they put BYU at number 23. Matt, do you believe BYU's schedule is worthy of a top 25 toughest schedule ranking?
Top 25? Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a P5 type schedule, and there's really no other way to slice it. You know, when you look at the type of schedule that most of these P5 teams are playing, and you compare top to bottom, week one through week whatever, the full spectrum of teams they're playing. I mean, this is a pretty competitive schedule.
Yeah.
And some of those, and we've got some pretty good hitters there right up front. And that's got to factor into the way you evaluate the how tough that schedule is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, think of it this way: Phil Still was on Cougar Sports Saturday last week, and he talked about that the schedule, and BYU is the only team in the country that's opening with four games against Power Five opponents. Now, he thinks, Phil Still does, that three of those four games are toss-ups. Now, the Washington game being the exception. No, maybe not. Well, I mean, yes, I think the three games he's really talking about, Tennessee, Utah, because it was close last year, though he really likes Utah to be much better. He thinks they're a top 10 team nationally. And, you know, he is not enamored, because he's looking at numbers and not brands, by Tennessee or USC, right? And you and I have talked about this. This is not the Tennessee teams with Peyton Manning. This is not USC with, you know, Reggie Bush. These are not bad football teams, but they're not, you know, Washington. Quite frankly, they're not Washington or Utah in quality. You know, just based on last year and what they have coming back. Matt, what do you think that's three of these four games are going to be toss-ups?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just not optimistic enough about this.
The answer is yes.
Three or four of these are toss-ups?
Yeah. Well, Tennessee and USC are, right?
Okay.
Okay. So two of them are. It really comes down to... If you think Washington might be because they're really young on defense, they lost some really good players, or if you think, well, Utah's a rivalry game, they just played a few months back, and BYU almost beat them. So you think, well, it's a rivalry game, highly motivated, it's a toss-up just because of the circumstances. So I think, you know, I could buy that you say, no, just two of them are. But I think it's three, and I think it's Utah. I think three of these games are toss-ups, which, you know, means, and see if you follow my logic here or you think I'm nuts, that means this could be a special season. And the line between it being a special season and a mediocre season is thin, right? Because if three games are toss-ups, you could be as good as you think you are and be one and be 0-4 coming out of that, right? Or you could be as good as you think you are and be 3-1 coming out of that gauntlet, right? Because football bounces here, one little injury there, tipped pass here, right? Like, it's that's how close BYU is, I think, between something like the 1996 season, which we talked about last year, and something more like last year, right? Where you live, What do you think? Is the line that close?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'll give you, I think the two games that are toss-ups, I'll give you that. I think the Washington and Utah games are both going to be a little bit steeper hills to climb. And, you know, but coming two and I think if you look at that and you say, I feel pretty good about our chances of coming through those four games 2-2. And then you tell me that you just need to win one more of these to put yourself in a position to potentially have a special season. If I look at it that way, then maybe I can get behind the statement that the line between a regular season and a special season is thin.
Yeah.
But I'm not in a place where I'm ready to call either of those other two games toss-ups.
You're a pessimist. I get it. You're a pessimist.
I think I'm just a realist. I think I'm just being realistic.
Well, let's go to pessimism and talk about Neil Pau. We're not going to talk about the details of what happened, but Mike Barlow at Ruckus76 on Twitter has a question for us that's related to the football team. Following Neil Pau's arrest, how big of an impact will his expected suspension, which, of course, as of right now, nothing has been announced, have on our offense? Are we really in the dire straits that friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, makes us out to be? I think we've got enough in reserve to cover for this. Matt, how big of a deal is it if Neil Pau is not part of the receiving core in 2019?
I'm not going to say that we won't miss Neil Pau if he's not part of the receiver core in 2019, but in any given year, you're going to lose a player or two for a variety of reasons at this point in the season. And it'll be something like this, or maybe it could be an injury or whatever it is. And if you look at the roster right now, if you're going to lose a player out of a position group, this is not the worst situation. Okay. We've got a pretty good, we have a decent set of receivers, and we got a couple other guys that I think can catch passes. This is a recoverable problem.
So he was seventh on the team in receptions last year, came on towards the end of the year, had 18 catches for 216 yards. That's what we're worried about?
I think we're going to be okay, guys.
I'm not saying to similar to what you said, it's not good that he's gone. He showed some flashes of some potential last year that I think, was good. But I really never saw him as a difference maker, right? Romney is a difference maker. I think you may have, Shumway, I think, can be a difference maker, right? Obviously, Bushman and MLP on the tight end side and Holker and these guys and Hefo. I mean, these are guys that are going to be focuses of the offense. Pau was depth, right? And I know there were some quotes about how great he was in spring, but what do quotes mean to me? I don't care what the coaches say, to be honest, because their motivations are different than telling us what's going to happen in fall. That's not their motivation. Their motivation is to motivate players and to send messages, and it's not to tell us who's going to be the important players. So it's unfortunate, but I'm not really that worried about it.
Now, this isn't something that we're going to, if in the event that he is suspended, maybe he misses the season, I don't know. This isn't one that we're going to wake up at the end of that four game stretch and say, man, this outcome might have been different had he been on the field. It just isn't.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. All right, Matt, let's move on to it's time. Oh, no. I almost missed one. Going back to the good news category, Matt Jimmer has signed with Golden State and will play with their summer league team. I have been saying for years this is the team you need to be on, and they've got a couple of major injuries. Well, I guess Durant isn't Davis need to sign with them, but let's have it, man. This is it. This is his chance. He's 30. This is kind of it, man.
I feel like we've said that before. Like this is it. This is his last chance.
I've never said that before. You may have said it, but I've never said it.
But I don't. I think I have. I know that I have. But I don't disagree with your point that if there is a team in the NBA that is looking for a Jimmer Fredette, that's probably the place. And you're right. We've got some pretty prominent holes left on the roster. Now, I don't know that he fills a Durant role, but he can. I mean, he can shoot the ball from anywhere on the court, and that's the team that has made that. They're the ones that have made that popular in the NBA right now. They've changed the game.
If anybody can figure out how to use him, it's Kerr, right? Like Steve Kerr will figure it out. If they decide he has a fit on their team, he'll figure out how to use him. I mean, Curry is having the career that I thought it was possible that Jimmer would have. Not likely, right? I didn't likely think he would be an MVP and you know, that type of level player. But I thought like that was his upside. Turned out I was wrong. I don't think that actually was his upside. But I think, you know, his ability to shoot from anywhere and create his own shot is you know, kind of like Curry, right? Different heights, different, you know, different skills in many levels. But anyway, I'm excited to see if it happens. I don't think it's likely that he's, like you said, filling the Kevin Durant role on next year's Golden State Warriors.
But the kid can shoot.
He can shoot. He can shoot. All right, Matt, it's time to pop some popcorn. Technically, actually, it's just time to gather some blossoms off of a tree. So when I... Do you know how many people get the lyrics of this song wrong?
Oh, here we go. You're going to be that guy now.
What did I see?
This, popcorn pop. Really? We're going to do this? We're doing this. This is where we've come to.
On the apricot tree. Okay. Spring has brought me such a nice surprise. What's the next word?
Popcorn popping right before my eyes?
Blossoms popping.
Oh man, I'm one of those.
So when I taught this in primary, here's the thing. None of the kids knew it was about an apricot tree or flowers. They all thought it was like some fictional popcorn tree. And we're talking about like the 10-year-olds. So apparently we sing this song growing up and we thought it was actually about popcorn. Even though the lyrics say it wasn't really so.
But it seemed to me.
Yeah, anyway. All right.
But don't we in the stands when we do this popcorn popping thing and people are popping like kernels of popcorn? Aren't we just propagating this myth of this campaign of misinformation to our children that you're so ashamed of and upset about?
Yes.
You're shocked and appalled?
But it's fantastic. I'm not shocked and appalled, you idiot. I'm just pointing it out because I told you about this. Didn't I say this on the show that I did a version of that in primary of that popping up and down in the stadium?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, so it's like my favorite thing to do in primary. Maybe I'll get that calling again. That's a fun calling.
You're a genius.
Yep, you're a genius, Gump. All right, so today's topic is the 1999 men's volleyball team. Now, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this team is that both of us were on campus when this went down.
Yes, and it was amazing.
We both went to most of the matches that were in Provo that season.
Mm-hmm.
And we were both mildly obsessed with this team.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and stick with mildly because it's less embarrassing to state it that way.
The Smithfield House rocked this season. And if you look at BYU's history as a team, there's not a long history, right? Men's volleyball is fairly small. And there's not a long history here for BYU. It is a fairly short history, right, for BYU. I think BYU, let's see, when did they start? 91 or 90, I think. So let's see. Yeah, 1990, Carl McGowan started. They were 5-22 that season, 1-15 in conference. Right, they wouldn't win their first conference title until that year would be their first conference title. Think about that for a second. You win your first conference title and a national championship in the first year, right? And again, I get it. It's a small sport, relatively speaking. Anyway, Matt, let's talk about expectations coming into that season, which is interesting. In 1998, they had finished the year 16-6. 14-5 in the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation, and third in the conference. Let's suffice it to say that nobody, probably not even those in the locker room, thought a 30-1 season and a national championship were coming in 1999. Can we say that fairly? We can say that fairly certain, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's correct. You'd be hard pressed to go back in time and legitimately claim that you saw this coming a year in advance. I mean, I don't even think McGowan would try and lie.
Oh, I don't think anybody. I definitely don't think they would see it coming. So the expectations were basically, I don't want to say non-existent, right? Because that's kind of silly. They had had a decent season. But if you just look at the history of the program, I mean, they had had, you know, they had never finished. Not only had they not won the conference, they'd never finished higher than third. They'd been third two seasons, three of the past four seasons, had a second place finish in 1994. And McGowan was building something. I think people understood he was building something. But I don't think people had any idea what was coming at all. So let's fast forward and look at the schedule. So they start the year off beating UC Irvine, Ohio State, who's got a good program, tough matches. But the real match that we're going to talk about that mattered was the heartbreaking 5-set loss. I was there against Long Beach State. Matt, do you remember that one?
Yeah, that one stung.
We're undefeated at the time, had looked really good, hadn't even dropped that many sets, and I called in sick for work that day. I worked at the Brick Oven. I actually worked with Ryan Millar's wife at the time at the Brick Oven, and I was walked out of there going, well, special season is over.
I mean, because that was the team. That was the team to beat. That was the team that had knocked us out the year before.
Mm-hmm.
They were the ones that had come into the season with some real expectations, right?
Big expectations. So this was tough. And then
yeah, that was painful.
Bounced back the next day. I did not. I actually went to work against the UC Santa Cruz. Aren't they the Sea Slugs?
The Sea Slugs or the Banana Slugs?
Banana Slugs. I think you're right. I think it's Banana Slugs.
Yeah,
but
the Banana Slugs.
The real moment that mattered, the next moment that mattered in this season was Pepperdine. So Pepperdine comes to Provo on March 26th and 27th of 1999. Pepperdine at the time was, by our research, we think they were ranked second or first at the time. They had one loss coming into that weekend. And who had they lost to? You looked it up. UCLA?
I did look it up. No, I don't. It wasn't UCLA. I can't. No, I'm not sure.
Okay. They had one loss. They ranked either second or first in the country. It was assumed that them and Long Beach State and Penn State would be three of the four teams in the Final Four, which at the time there were just four teams that were invited to the tournament. And they were three of the four teams that were hypothesized at that point in the season would be part of that. And then the magic happened, Matt. So tell us more about that weekend.
Well, so keep in mind that BYU at this point, due to their record, I mean, even with the Long Beach State loss, I mean, they're still flying pretty high. And Pepperdine comes in, has some expectations, and that was as loud as I've ever heard it in the Smithfield House that weekend. It was amazing. And then Pepperdine came in with this really powerful guy, George. I think it's George Rumaine. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right, but he was huge, and it felt like he could spike the ball through the net. Like it didn't even matter. But to be able to come, you know, the ability of this team to then sweep both of those matches on consecutive days. I mean, that was when the feelings seemed to come back, right? I think, you know, I remember the loss to Long Beach State and how deflated everybody was. But by the end of that Friday night, the excitement from 2 weeks before or a week and a half before had definitely returned. And there was an energy in that in the field house, unlike anything I've experienced in any other BYU sporting event, to be honest. It was just because it's so you're smaller, you're right on top of the court. Everybody's yelling. I mean, it was just deafeningly loud in there. And you were able to beat this team that, I mean, this was now your hurdle, right? It was either if you wanted, you know, you were looking at this special season, and then you have this singular loss to Long Beach State where you feel like, oh, this is it. Like, this is going to fall apart. And then you're able to come back and put that all back together against this Pepperdine team the next weekend. Absolutely, absolutely unbelievable. And I think that was the moment that everybody knew that this was the season we had been hoping for, that this was going to be – this was really, really something special.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, going into that weekend, the best-case scenario was a split, right? Split with Pepperdine and then see if you can go on a run to finish the season.
Yeah, because if you do – even if you do that, you've got two losses, and Long Beach had a couple – I think they finished the season. What they finished the season for with I don't know. You'd have a shot with just those two losses.
You have a shot.
You have a shot.
By sweeping them, and then they really didn't have a close match the rest of the regular season. A couple of one-setters against UC Santa Barbara and USC. UC Santa Barbara on the road, though they swept them the next night, and then USC. The next moment that really matters, so they make the Final Four. They beat a Penn State team that I think only had one loss. Maybe two, and had won their conference and had been an excellent team, do it in four. And then you get the rematch, the opportunity against, after that heartbreaking five-set loss against Long Beach State, you face them. I mean, this is like a sports movie, man. Like, it's probably not dramatic enough to be a sports movie, but, you know, you get to get redemption.
I don't know. It was pretty awesome.
And then you sweep Long Beach State in the national championship match. It was an amazing run, Matt. And I don't know if I've ever had as much fun. Maybe the 2004 Red Sox. If I've ever had as much fun following a team beginning to end in a season. I don't know if I've ever had as much fun as I did in 1999 with men's volleyball.
It was a ton of fun. I mean, I remember I, you know, before I got to Provo, right, this was my freshman year at BYU. And before I got to Provo, I don't even know that. I mean, I'd watched a little bit of men's volleyball because I know our sister came home after her freshman year. And this was when Ryan Millar was new on campus and there was a lot of buzz around him. And so people were getting excited about that. And she had gotten into it. And I remember she came home and we watched some games on ESPN, some matches on ESPN2 or something. So I kind of had felt it, but I never really watched men's volleyball or any volleyball of any kind other than maybe in the Olympics until that season. And so that was just, for me, that's one of that season and going to all those games and several of those we went to together. That's one of my, this season, this men's volleyball team is one of my favorite memories of BYU. And I think there is something there in terms of a story, right? I mean, the rivalries with these other teams are real. You know, as I went through and was kind of looking, trying to remember some of the players that we played against and these other things, you know, one of the things I came across was they did a piece, Long Beach did a piece on their 99 team a few years later where they followed up with some players. And one of these guys, they asked him his favorite memory of playing volleyball at Long Beach State. He says, "Oh, it's too difficult to beat just one, to pick just one." So he picks two wins. And one of them was the win against BYU and Provo in 1999, right? Because he's hanging on to that because we defeated him in the championship game, right? I mean, the rivalry and the emotion behind these games was real. And I mean, it's really amazing stuff. I disagree with you. I think you could make a really compelling sports movie out of this season. I think it'd be a ton of fun to watch. Maybe just because I'm a BYU fan, but the drama in this and the ability to put together that run and exercise that Long Beach demon after they had taken care of business against you the season before and prevented, you know, and taken the opportunity or prevented you from having the opportunity to compete in a championship setup, to being able to come back, they beat you again, right? In your gym, and you're thinking, oh, here we go again, like we're good but not quite good enough, and then to be able to come back and play that team again for the championship, I mean, that's a great story. And then to beat them the way that they did in that championship match, I mean, just amazing.
Yeah, according to BYU's website, there were 7,000 people at that Long Beach match. 7,000 people in the Smithfield House. Is that possible?
Crazy.
Did they do that one in the Marriott Center? No. That one wasn't in the Marriott Center. They did Hawaii in the Marriott Center.
The Hawaii match was in the Marriott Center.
Yeah, there was 14,000, according to BYUCougars.com, at the Marriott Center for the February 19th match.
And it was a record, right? They were trying to set a record for attendance or something.
Record for attendance, yeah. So look at it this way: that first match against Long Beach State in March, so you know, month and a half before the championship, it was an incredible match. Long Beach State takes the first set 15-13, then 15-19, right? So BYU is down two sets, and this is the old scoring system where you had to serve and get points, like most of us grew up.
Before rally scoring.
Yeah, before the rally scoring. And then BYU dominates the next two sets. And I remember that. Like, Long Beach State, it's the old classic thing. You take your pedal out, you take your foot off the pedal because, you know, all we have to do is win one more set, right? They can't beat us three sets in a row. And then they beat them two sets in a row. And then that last one goes to extras, and it's 14-16 for Long Beach. So, again, like you said, it's just like we're not quite good enough. And then they dismantle Long Beach State in the championship. I mean.
Oh, just, yeah. They never took their foot off the gas.
They had a stretch in that Final Four after dropping the first set to Penn State where they basically played dominant volleyball for six straight sets against the two other best teams in the country. And Ozzie Antonetti, who had a good season, was named the MVP of that of those finals, but he hadn't been BYU's best player. I don't know if he had been one of BYU's top three during that season, but you have to put him, and we're going to talk about this next, you have to put him as one of the three players that really made a difference that season because of how he played down the stretch and particularly in those championship games.
Well, and he was a lot of fun to watch all season long and could jump out of the gym.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, he was amazing. The other player, of course, to talk about is Ryan Miller. He was the probably, you know, with due respect to a few guys that have been there recently, the best player to play at BYU. I mean, went on to play for the national team, but think about some of these stats here for a second. He led the team in kills. No surprise. Second on the team in kills behind Antonetti. Okay. His hitting percentage was almost 500. Okay. Way higher than anybody else on the team. He had twice as many aces as anybody else on the team. He was third on the team in digs, right? He was great at everything. And he was the player that everybody else knew that if he was on that season, your chances of beating BYU weren't really good. So if it's Antonetti and Ryan Millar, who's that third player that matters? I mean, they had a really good roster, and we'll talk about other players besides Antonetti and Millar, but who is that third player?
You know, I have a hard time with that. We were talking about this a little before the show. I think, you know, Millar, and the other thing I'll just throw on Millar is you got to remember he was playing for a large, you know, for some important matches in there with a back injury.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was wearing a brace and some other things. He'd taken a hard fall. And when you're 6'8 and jump that high and come down on your back, I mean, that's.
Yeah, which match did he miss?
That'll hurt. I don't remember.
He missed one,
I think. I'm with you. I mean, he may be the best of all time. So who's the third? Before I really started looking into this, I think that just because of memory, I think I would have gone with Rich Lamborn. But he went on and did some successful things in international play and also looks like Captain America. So I'm worried that I'm just defaulting to that. But as I went back and watched some highlights from this season, you don't want to leave out a guy like I'm going to pronounce this name like a total American, but Hector LeBron.
LeBron
was pretty solid. I remember being a big fan of Ingo Lindemann.
Lindemann was great.
You know, there were some really good players on this team. And so it's hard for me down to that third space. It's hard. Mack Wilson was excellent.
Mack Wilson was terrific that season. Scott Bunker was limited, but was good. I think it's probably Lamborn. I think LeBron is not a bad
Steve Hines? Steve Hines had a good year.
I mean, LeBron has so many assists, right? And but LeBron was pretty good. I mean, in the end, they had a bunch of players that mattered, and you can't win a national championship without that, right? I mean, you're going to have to
Right.
have a bunch of guys who've played at a very, very high level, and they did. And it was amazing. Now, one of the cool stats about this season was the average home attendance was 4,700 people. The average away attendance was 376. So think about this. And men's volleyball has grown since 1999. There's other teams. More and more teams with bigger fan bases. But think about this. They opened at home against UC Irvine to crowds of 1,700 in the first match and 2,400. They then traveled to Ohio State, and the crowds are 280 and 283 people. It's like my high school basketball game, right?
Yeah.
And you're flipping from these matches where there's a couple hundred people to a couple thousand, and there's a reason why that Long Beach player pointed out Provo, and it's still true that a lot of players love beating BYU in Provo because it's so loud, and when you beat them, it goes so quiet, right? And they may play in a place where the fans aren't like that don't get into men's volleyball that same way, and it's true in women's volleyball too, But anyway, Matt, this was a special and awesome season, and I wish the internet was more full of data on it, right? And so that we could break down some of this even more. But memory has erased a lot of it from my brain, and on top of that, the internet just doesn't have a ton of detail on it.
And, well, there's not a lot of space on the internet. Like, they run out of
Yeah,
room.
they run out of room. I mean,
You know, you don't want to run out
how
of
much
room on the
internet
internet.
ink can you have, right?
Right. But I seriously, I can't say strongly enough, like, for me as a student and a sports fan at BYU, what being there for this season meant. I mean, this was a big deal for me, and it was so fun to watch. One of my favorite, you know, you look at that Pepperdine series. The Hawaii game in the Marriott Center, you know, and then watching them win the national championship on ESPN2 there in May. This is for me. I mean, this is one of my best memories of my whole time at BYU is being there to watch this season. I mean, it was just a special thing. It was awesome,
Well, and
awesome.
it took what Carl McGowan was building and put BYU as one of the premier programs. They would, continue to challenge for positions in that Final Four, win conference titles, all that stuff, and it was an amazing run, which has basically continued until today. So it set off like
Well,
a
yeah.
20-year, so that's the legacy, right? Not only did they win the national championship, and unfortunately they haven't repeated that, but they've had a chance to, basically be good and be a contender for most of the last 20 years.
Well, yeah, but if you look at okay, so yeah, so they do this in 99, they come back in 2001, right? And in 2001 they beat UCLA and they do it again. And then, you know, and then you got a runner up. And then you've got, you know, so I mean, you get in there a few times there, but through for the next 4 or 5 years, and there's a little bit of a drought, but you definitely, you know, back in the teens of, you know, the last 6, 7 years, you see them making that resurgence. But you're right, this is where it all started, and you know, and BYU volleyball has grown since then, but so has men's volleyball collegiately anyway, right? I mean, I think that in '99. They could have invited any school of any size. They could have put any of those schools in that top four to compete. And then it wasn't, you know, probably 10 years later, I think, is when they broke out into divisions and things, just because it started to become more popular. But
Yeah, I mean,
anyway, yeah, it's a great time for volleyball
you
there.
win those two championships, and yeah, there was a dry run there, but they were never terrible, right? They were often second or third in the conference, even during that time. And then, of course, Chris McGowan and Sean Olmstead have taken that to an even higher level without winning a championship, unfortunately, but coming close three times.
I think Olmstead will get there. I mean, 2019 might obviously, you know, but
it's
a little bit of an aberration. But I think Olmstead is a coach that can get us there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had his first two seasons were two. They almost won the championship, right? So you can't complain about that. Well, Matt, let's finish off today by playing a game, as we like to do. And today we're going to play. We haven't done this answering machine.
Oh, here we go.
Answering machine. Now, I'm about to explain it poorly, and then we'll do
it.
Is it
the best? I love it when you do this. How many rounds are we doing?
We're doing one round each. One round
each. All right, excellent.
So how this works is one of us calls the other of us. And when we call, we get an answering machine message. We do not know, nor did we plan this ahead of time, whose answering machine we will be calling. Then the unsuspecting answerer, caller, will then leave a message on said fictional answering machine. There we go. Butchered it again.
This is going to be great.
So, Matt,
as always, I've played this game before, and I'm still not sure what we're about to do.
Would you like to go first or second?
I'm not sure what that means. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and say go first, but I still don't know if I'm leaving a message first or
you're
if
leaving
I'm giving
a message. When it's your turn, excellent. You're the one leaving a message. All right.
All right. Excellent. I can't wait to leave an awkward rambling message because that's kind of my shtick.
That's kind of your thing. All right. Dial it up, my friend.
Boop, 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 boop. Ring, ring.
Hello, you've reached the answering machine of Tom Homo, the athletic director at BYU. I am not taking calls right now because I'm getting inundated by a bunch of BYU fans who think they know better how to run the athletic department and want me to join the Mountain West or the American Athletic Conference. I have nothing to say on that matter. Please leave a message, which I will most likely ignore. Thank you. Beep.
Hey, Tom, don't take the bait. Don't do it. You're doing the right thing. Steer clear. Sit tight. We got time. The Mountain West Conference is not anything of interest to anybody who actually understands what they're talking about. And there's no reason to jump on the American bandwagon just yet. We've got a couple of years with some good schedules. This is finally starting to pay off. And neither party should be incentivized for us to join forces just yet. Let's wait. See what the TV contracts do. Let's gather the payoff of what we went through to get to this point on the independent scheduling and see if we can actually do something with these schedules that you've put together and then play it from there. Let's wait for a real catalyst to push before we start freaking out around moves. Like we're playing the long game here, There's no reason to get antsy at this point. I know you're going to do the right thing. It's clear that that's kind of the course that you're taking. I just want to reiterate that. Thank you very much. And now I'm going to respectfully hang up. How'd I do? See, that wasn't too rambling and awkward.
It was very rambling.
I made it weird at the end.
Yeah, I'm going to respectfully hang up.
Whatever.
You weren't talking to him. It's not like you hung up in anger.
I feel like I was on one of those radio shows. All right, I'm going to hang up and listen now.
All right, Matt. I'm going to dial the phone now.
All right, here we go.
Beep, 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 beep. Ring. Ring, ring.
Hello, you've reached the voicemail of Michael Oresko, Commissioner of the American Athletic Conference. If you're calling with a suggestion of what we should do now that UConn has departed, you can go ahead and leave that at the beep, and I may or may not take it into consideration. Thanks. Beep.
Michael, I have no idea why I'm calling you. I actually was trying to dial somebody else. But I'm a BYU football fan, and since I've got a couple of awkward seconds of your time, I thought I'd say, hey, listen, when this whole thing shakes down, let's create a Power 5 conference, and let's do it together, right? Like, what if you ditch a few of the schools in the American Athletic Conference that aren't that great. And then add Boise, add BYU, and then go after like Oklahoma and maybe Kansas State and maybe, I don't know, go steal Arkansas, because I'm sure they're anxious to leave the SEC, because, I mean, they're never going to win. Anyway, I can't believe I just did a raspberry on your answering machine. Peace out!
You called it a raspberry.
Yeah, I don't know what I just said.
I wondered what you would do with that.
Not,
I knew that that
I was not
I figured that Mike Oresco
that.
Was one that you were not expecting to hear.
No,
so that was
I was waiting for Satake or even Olmstead, you know.
No, we've done all those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, we've not done Olmstead. I guess that would have been a good
no,
one.
No, I think one of us actually has. I'm pretty sure we have in the history of the answering machine
I'm
game.
I'm pretty sure I left a message about mustaches once.
I think you did, but you missed the big opportunity with Homo. You didn't ask him to – you didn't provide any Halloween costume recommendations.
All I can do is mess that up. There's nothing I can do to make that better.
That's
I'm going to let him
true.
Take care
He's
of that
gonna
all
have
on his own.
Way better idea than you do. Well, anyone,
right.
Anyway, we will be off next week due to the 4th of July and some holiday travel. But we'll be back again in 2 weeks to talk about the 1981 football team.
All right.
All right, indeed. And then, anyway, Matt, any parting words?
I feel like I want to go watch 99 volleyball highlights now, so that's probably what I'm going to go do.
That's what you should do. Thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. You can, of course, email the show at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. And oh my gosh, we missed it, Matt. We were supposed to talk about 1999 music.
Oh no.
So we're doing it right now. Wade Hillam.
Oh man.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. We're going all in.
We're doing it right now. We're going to end the show. I was about to end it, and we're not going to do it. We're going to go talk about what music was the 1999 men's volleyball team listening to.
All right. Well, I've already got one. I've already got one that I think was a clear, was clearly going to be on the list. Now you got to remember that volleyball season starts in January, right? So don't come at me with songs that were not popular until the end of 1999, because that just isn't right.
That's ridiculous. Of course, you got to go to really 98. Oh yeah.
I think you listened to this song on repeat for 365 straight days.
What are you talking about? I'm pretty sure you did. This weekend. Oh my gosh, I had that. I listened to that so much. All right, so I've got one for you that I am 100% sure that they would listen to in the locker room. Okay, hold on a second. It's pulling up.
That's it? That's all of it you're going to play?
No, it stopped for some reason. Matt, I've only got one question for you. Why didn't you just let Leo get on the wood?
Yeah, that makes no sense,
space
right?
For both
like,
of them
there was plenty of room up on that door.
All right, you got your second pick. We'll just do two.
You've totally distracted me. That's fine.
I did my joke one first.
Hold on, I'm getting there. This is very interesting for the listeners.
Yeah, very fascinating.
Yo, yo, this mess. You know what I'm saying?
Here we go. There you go. There's one for you. Been around the world.
All right.
My daddy's family.
Okay, I'm just going to do another jump one. I can't do a serious one because 1991 had so many terrible songs. Are you ready?
Oh, there's some great stuff in 1998. There's some great stuff. Tub thumping was a thing
Oh.
by a group called Chumbawamba.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
You just ruined it.
Are you serious?
See? There you go. My favorite was how popular that was at BYU and how the song is basically about drinking alcohol.
There was Cruel Summer cover by Ace of Base.
Oh, yeah, that's a terrible. Don't do that. Don't play it. I'm not even sure why you mentioned it. Anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. If you've held on this long, you got a weird treat at the end. You can, of course, you should subscribe on iTunes, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Sorry, Wade Hillam. On your mark, ready, set, let's go. Dance floor pro, I know, you know. I go psycho, rim a new joint hit. Just can't sit, gotta get jiggy with it. That's it, now honey, honey, come ride. DKNY, all up in my eyes. You got a rider, bag with a lot of stuff in it. Give it to your friend, let's spin.